Well, that was amazing, ma'am. Truly, that was spectacular. And it, boy, it is so appropriate for today's lesson. So thank you, my friend. Good to be up here with you, Katie Marie. Thank you so much. Before I begin our lesson today, I just want to mark a very significant and blessed event that occurred earlier this week. As you know, Maggie Alderman has been pursuing her ministerial degree and ordination for a while, and it is a long and transformative process. And our friend Carol Rainey Moncada has been doing the same thing, and especially these last few months, they finished their education online, so it's been quite a journey for both of them. So on Monday afternoon, there was an online graduation ceremony and ordination ceremony. And I was so pleased to be able to sit and watch this ceremony, watch them both graduate, watch them both be ordained. And so to have Maggie as our homegirl who did her internship in New Braunfels, and to have Carol, who is homegirl to Unity of Austin, but our intern for the last few months, that was a beautiful event. And I thought it would be weird with it being online, but it was just lovely. And during the ordination ceremony, the officiant asked all of the Unity ministers that were online with the graduates to repeat our consecration vows, to rededicate ourselves as Unity ministers. So I was able to do that during a board meeting on the other screen. So, hey, we're getting so good at this, are we not? Congratulations to Maggie and to Carol. We bless you, and we're so happy for you. And hopefully we will have some screenshots of those ceremonies for you in the next couple of weeks. So today, for Father's Day, I wanted to tell you the story of one of my favorite dudes in the Bible. This guy was a dude. He wasn't just a man, he wasn't just a guy, he was a dude. This man really has a magnificent story, and I suggest to you that if you want to read a Bible story, that you go to the book of Genesis and read the story of Joseph, because it is fantastic. And I never thought that I would enjoy sitting on a Saturday afternoon and reading, oh, I'd say a third of the book of Genesis. Who does that? Ministers do, preachers do. So that's what I did on Saturday afternoon, was read the Bible for a while. But I want to tell you this great story, and I'm going to zip through it pretty quickly because I want you to focus on something. If we're going to look at the Bible at all, as we've been doing in our Bible, metaphysical Bible interpretation classes on Wednesday night, it's for us to look at those characters as part of us. We can find ourselves in every character. We can find the situations, those that also parallel our lives. So, so listen to the story in that way. And know that I'm telling this story today because it is an example of masculine energy. And it's not confined, masculine energy is not confined to men. Women have masculine energy as well. Just as I spoke about on Mother's Day, men have feminine energy. So listen to this story. First of all, I want to share with you a little cartoon that Kit found earlier this week. I debated on whether or not I should share it with you, and I've decided that right up front I'm going to share it with you. The pastor says, I've been to 20 meetings this week trying to figure out how to get us back to church. And the congregants say, hey, we're on the sofa in our pajamas drinking coffee, and we can mute you at any time, so we're good. So I just want to say, don't you dare mute this. Don't you dare. Okay? You're in it to win it, so stay here. And I had to laugh when I saw that because it's just like, oh my gosh. It's very creative what we're doing to have church and to have connection and to have community. So here's the story of Joseph. The story starts out, this is Joseph of the coat of many colors. So in honor of Joseph, here you go. Joseph was the beloved son of Jacob, who I talked about Sunday before last, one of 12 sons, beloved of his father, and his brothers knew it, and he knew it. So as a 17-year-old boy, he was just a little bit arrogant. He was a little bit privileged. And so he had these amazing dreams all of his life, we discover. He had these amazing dreams, but he made the mistake of telling his brothers about two dreams that he had in which they would bow down to him. Big mistake, because the brothers did not really appreciate that idea very much at all. And they plotted together to take Joseph out into the wilderness, and they were going to kill him. His brother Reuben stuck up for him, and he said, no, let's don't kill him. That's, you know, kind of against the law, God's law. So let's don't kill him, but let's just leave him out here in the wilderness. So they took him out, dumped him in a pit, took off his pretty coat, shredded it, put the blood of an animal on it so they could take it back to Jacob and say, sorry, Joseph is dead. They leave Jacob in the pit waiting for the slave traders to come by. And they did. Slave traders got Jacob out of Joseph out of the pit, took him to Egypt and sold him as a slave. He was put into the home of one of the guards of the Pharaoh. The guard's name was Potiphar. And so he served in the house of Potiphar, and Potiphar was very happy with his work, but Potiphar was very happy with Joseph. And so she tried to seduce him several times. Can I talk about this on Sunday? Okay. We got it all, folks. We got it all in the Old Testament. So she tried to seduce him, and he kept refusing her advances, knowing that he would get in trouble. So one day when he refuses, she grabs his garment, he runs out of the room, naked, and she screams, ah, Joseph tried to assault me, help, help. Joseph goes to prison, unjustly. So here's a kid who's beloved of his father. His brothers betray him, throw him in a pit. He's sold off as a slave. He's got a good position. The owner's wife sets him up for a fall. He goes to prison. Just accepting his fate and never forgetting that God is with him. And it says this in the book of Genesis over and over again, and the Lord was with him. So there were two of the Pharaoh's people that were in the prison with them, the cupbearer, and the baker. And they had dreams, and Joseph interpreted their dreams. And they were very impressed with his interpretation, and the word got back to the Pharaoh that there was a Hebrew in jail who could interpret dreams. So he had a dream that was very disturbing to him, called Joseph to him, and said, what do these dreams mean? Joseph said, the Lord being with him, you're going to have 7 years of feast and 7 years of famine. And the Pharaoh said, oh no, what am I going to do? And Joseph said, well, I have a plan if you're interested. How to set aside the resources, manage the resources, so that you don't run into trouble when the famine comes. So the Pharaoh accepts his plan. The Pharaoh makes him second in command to himself. So now Joseph has risen from the pit, from the prison. He's now second in command to the Pharaoh. And he does manage all the resources of Egypt so that when the famine comes, the people have plenty. As a matter of fact, they have so much that the neighboring countries and tribes came to Egypt to buy goods to get them through the famine. So now let's go back to Joseph's brothers. And they go to their father Jacob and say, they're selling good things in Egypt. Shall we go? He says, sure, go ahead. But don't take Benjamin, my youngest, because I don't want anything to happen to him. See, Joseph and Benjamin were the two sons of Jacob's wife, Rachel. And Jacob loved Rachel a whole lot. So he was already just in terrible grief about the loss of Joseph. He didn't want to lose Benjamin too. So all the brothers go to Egypt, and they come before Joseph and don't recognize him. And they ask to buy these things. Think about yourself. Think about yourself just for a second. Have you ever been betrayed? Have you ever been the betrayer? Have you ever set somebody up to fail? Have you ever been set up to fail? Have you ever been acknowledged for your gifts and been able to use them well? That's where we are so far. So when the brothers show up in front of Joseph, they don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And he decides he's going to play around with this for a little bit. He's like, are you spies? Did you come into Egypt, you Hebrew guys, to spy on us? And they said, no, we just want to buy the goods. That's all we want to do. And they said, and so Joseph starts asking questions. So who's your father? And do you have anybody else at your home? So yes, they find out that Jacob is alive, that his brother Benjamin is still alive. He goes, all right, I'm going to hold you in prison for a few days, but here's what I want you to do. I want you to take some goods. You can go ahead and take your goods and go back to your land in Canaan. But when you come back for the rest of your goods, I want you to bring your youngest brother with you. So unbeknownst to the brothers, Joseph takes their sacks of money that they paid him for the goods and puts it back in their stuff to take home. When they discover that the money's back in their bags, they're thinking, oh no, we're in really big trouble because now this guy's going to think that we stole from him. So they're scared to go back. They finally talk Jacob into letting Benjamin come back with them. So they come back. This story goes on for a while, but I'm going to make it real short. They all get back to Joseph in Egypt. And when Joseph sees his brother Benjamin, he's overcome with emotion. And he has to hide himself away for a few minutes to compose himself again and wash his face. And he comes back in. He gives the brothers a little more of a bad time. And finally says, okay, you're free to go back to your homeland. But he takes his silver cup, puts it in Benjamin's bag, and then sends his guards out after they leave to examine the bags, and they find Joseph's cup in Benjamin's bag, and it's like, uh-oh, we're in trouble again. And all this time, the brothers are just overcome with guilt because they feel like all this is happening because of what they did to Joseph, that God is punishing them, and that and Joseph is the instrument of punishment, although they don't know it's him. That's what they believe. This goes to show you what guilt will do for you. It will have you looking at every single way that you can think of that you're being punished for what you did. Does that sound familiar? Guilt is a powerful, powerful thing that we carry around with us, and it twists us up on the inside. And believe me, these brothers were twisted up. So they go back to Egypt and they say, we swear we didn't steal this cup. It was just in the bag. We don't know how it happened. And so Joseph sees that his brothers are trying to do right. He tells his people, all right, set aside a meal for just me and these men. And at the meal, they're talking about how they've done something bad in the past. And Joseph can't take it anymore. And he cries to them, I am Joseph, your brother. And there's great celebration and weeping. And it's so, so sweet. And Joseph says, go back to your father Jacob and his wives. And you can read, if you want to, about 3 pages of how many people are in Jacob's family at this point. I don't suggest you do that, but it's there if you want to. So this whole horde of people are going to come to Egypt. And before they leave to go fetch all the rest of the family, the brothers kneel down before Joseph, as was prophesied in the dream. And they beg his forgiveness. And again, Joseph weeps. And this is what he says to his brothers after their apology. And for this, all you have to do is go to the last page of Genesis. What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did to him? So they approached Joseph, saying, "Your father gave this instruction before he died. Say to Joseph, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong they did in harming you. Now, therefore, please forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also wept, fell down before him, and said, "We are here as your slaves." But Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones." In this way, he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. "Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today." So if you ever wanted to know how the Hebrew people got to Egypt, that's the beginning of the story. Later on, you'll have the story of Moses bringing the Hebrews, who finally became slaves, out of Egypt. You meant harm, but God meant it for good. Because if this hadn't all happened, I wouldn't be in this position to be able to help this dynasty of Hebrew family survive. Now, this is a man who is showing us his maturity from an arrogant 17-year-old to a man who is powerful and respected by the Pharaoh of Egypt. This is a man who uses his wisdom and his idea of abundance and prosperity to keep not only his own people in Egypt flourishing, but to help others as well. This is a man who took his wisdom, who took his ability to forgive, who took God's grace and forgave for the harm that was done to him, and saw the bigger picture. Now, these are attributes I think all of us would like to have. Is that not so? Would we not like to see everything that happens to us that we would consider harm and see it instead for good? Would we not, and this is important, whether there's an apology or no apology, would we not like to have our hearts softened enough to weep and forgive? Wow. So today, on this Father's Day, I invite you to think about those paternal figures in your lives that have been significant to you in the example that they've shown you. That they're fearless about God's gifts in them. That they're wisely powerful. That they're faithful in adversity and faithful in triumph. That they're generous to people, even those who harm them. Do you know a paternal figure that has done that for you? Could be a father, could be a mother, could be an uncle or a mentor, or somebody who took you under their wing and said, "This is how to live an upright and trustworthy life." I love this story of Joseph. Not only is it readable, really readable, it has some beautiful prose in it, and it has one of the most significant lessons that I can think of from the Old Testament. You meant it for harm, but God meant it for good. And so if God is all good, if God is everywhere present, if God is all the time, everywhere, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-powerful, then there can be no harm if we choose to see it for good. Now, beloved, we're in a time right now that is difficult and uncomfortable. It's extremely difficult for some people. It's extremely difficult for people who live in poverty, for people who don't have access to good health care, for people who have to work to take care of all the rest of us because they don't have a choice. The pandemic doesn't discriminate. And so we can see this as harm. And it's okay if you see pockets of good. I encourage you to find them. Somewhere far beyond this, we will have the gift of hindsight. And we'll be able to look back at everything we are going through right now and say, God meant this for good. That's really the only choice we have. The other one is unthinkable. The other one is to say that God punishes, that God kills, that God does bad things to us. It's not true. It's a pathogen. And it's doing what pathogens do. All the circumstances of your life right now, please hold on in faith, as Jan shared with us today. Please hold on in faith, like Joseph did. God is meaning this for good. Hopefully, it will mean that we are better and deeper people. Maybe it will open our eyes to the things that we've been blind about. Maybe it will make us more aware of our brothers and sisters everywhere, at all times. The ones we agree with and the ones we disagree with. The ones that we've ignored and the ones that we embrace. Hopefully, we will slow down and live a life of conscious awareness of the presence of God everywhere. And not get so caught up in the things that we have always taken for granted. So, write this down if you need to. You, whatever that is, fill in the blank. You might have meant it for harm, but God meant it for good. Because that has to be the lesson. That has to be the lesson for our lives. And beloved, this is not just positive thinking platitudes. This is a hard, hard truth. Not hard in the way that it's hard because it's hard for us to get it sometimes. But it is absolute. And I will say that with confidence. And I say that with faith. And so with that, beloved, let's examine where we are in our faith. Kit did something last week that I really, really loved during her meditation at the piano. She kept her eyes open, looking at you. And so I invite you in the beginning of this meditation to keep your eyes open and let's make eye contact with each other. Let's see each other and look into each other's hearts. I don't have to see your eyes to know that they're there. And know that it's just as though we are in the room together. And so, beloved, whether it's the story of Joseph or the memory and appreciation of one who modeled those attributes of faith and wisdom and good action and generosity, let that soften and open your heart. That's a good place for us to begin. Just let your heart open. Sometimes it's easier with our eyes open because we can't go away to somewhere else. We get right here, right now, fully present. And so with your open heart, let all the good that God has for you fall right in there. All the good you didn't realize yet. All the good that you have not given thanks for yet. All the good that is coming your way that you can give thanks for in advance. Let it fall. Let it linger. Let it be magnified. And breathe while you're doing it. Just breathe. Reach out now in your heart to your brothers and sisters, those who are in the room with you. And if you're alone, reach out to your community that you know is right here with you. We're apart, but we're together. Believe me, we are. Reach out your heart to embrace your brothers and sisters, known and unknown. Because we all add strength to each other. We make each other greater because we are one. We are one. And we live in the one. And now, if you will, close your eyes and breathe deeply. Let go of anything less than gratitude and appreciation. And in embracing of your good, let everything else go. And reach out to those living and beyond this life that have been that wonderful influence for you. And simply say, thank you. And know that your gratitude is received. And if you have tears, it's okay. Remember, Joseph wept. For the beauty of this day, for the beauty of this world, for the beauty of our united hearts, and for the never-ending presence of God, we are so grateful, so grateful. And knowing this, we say, and so it is. Amen.